There was a time when airline travel was a treat, believe it or not, even fun. That's right. And obviously the September 11 terrorist attacks changed all that in ways that were necessary. Our next guest is here to discuss an element of the post-9/11 days that, through its ineffectiveness and the way it was implemented, shows its really lack of need, yet it still remains. He is a transportation policy expert for the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Mark Scribner. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. CEI.org is where we learn more about this issue and others at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Wants to bring it to your attention, hopefully have you raise your voice and do something about this. And what we were talking about here, Mark, are they full-body image scanners that are at 160 airports across the country. And CEI recently brought up a few relevant points about its the program's effectiveness and even its overall necessity.
Yes. So basically, just for a little bit of background, as you mentioned, we have over 700 of these full-body imaging scanners in 160 airports nationwide. TSA originally began rolling these out, deploying them in airports in 2008. But what they didn't do is follow the proper procedures for doing so. On the book, we've had for 60 years, we've had something called the Administrative Procedure Act, which governs how federal agencies, or at least most federal agencies, roll out their regulations. So what TSA failed to do was justify their rollout, their deployment of these machines through or under the Administrative Procedure Act, and publish a notice and or open a notice and comment rulemaking proceeding, and give the public opportunity to comment. Then in 2010, so 2 years after they began the rollout, an organization called the Electronic Privacy Information Center filed suit, alleging that the deployment of the body scanners by the TSA violated the Administrative Procedure Act. A year later, in July 2011, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals found in Epic's favor and ordered the TSA to, quote, promptly open a rulemaking proceeding. A year after that, TSA had still not complied with the court's order. Epic filed a petition to enforce the court's mandate that we joined CEI and a number of other organizations joined in on an amicus brief. And then September of that year, the court ultimately denied Epic's petition to try to force the rulemaking open within 60 days, but essentially ordered a deadline. TSA barely met that deadline in March of 2013, and they proposed a rule. Unfortunately, that rule did not meet the court's mandate. It didn't. It wasn't what is called a legislative rule, which these bind people. So you need to. There are certain specific elements that need to be there. Kind of the who, what, where, when, why of that. You need to tell. You need to explain the American public who is bound by this what their rights and obligations are. TSA. Basically, in their rule, said, we may have these machines, and if we do have them, we'll probably use them. And that just does not meet the bar that the court set. So here we are a year later from the end of the comment period, the end of the public comments, and TSA is still has failed to produce the final rule that the court ordered them to do in 2011. So what we've been pointing out is that the TSA has failed to justify the use of these machines on either on procedural grounds, but also on sort of cost benefit and risk analysis. And it's been, we're over 5 years of lawlessness at the agency now, and it's something the American public I think should be aware of, because these machines, as I said, they're very expensive, and there is reason to believe that they are not at all effective in detecting body-borne explosives.
And this is, as you mentioned, a direct violation of the Administrative Procedure Act. And I think of if this was a private business, privately owned business that was in the TSA spot right now facing these same questions and court orders, would they be allowed to skate like the TSA has been allowed to skate so far?
Well, obviously, a private business wouldn't be subject to the Administrative Procedure Act. But as you mentioned, if a court had ordered it to do something 3 years ago and it had still failed to comply, you could bet that the court would not grant as much leeway as it appears to have done here with TSA. And TSA, so an agency of 50,000 people, actually in response to our petition in 2012, actually said we do not have the personnel necessary to draft the rule. So they out of an agency of 50,000, they couldn't find a couple lawyers and economists or hire a couple more to actually do what they should have done back in 2008. And we found that to be ridiculous on its face.
Maybe make some of those non-essential employees you always hear about in those snowy days, make them essential and have them put them to work.
Well, exactly. I know, you know, when we had the so-called essential employees, with the last government shutdown, we had numerous federal employees that are on what's known as official time, which is basically doing 100% official time. So basically, we had so-called essential employees during the shutdown doing union business, government union business. They performed no other tasks other than managing the relationships between the government employee union members and the union. So we had, you know, so we've had the definition of essential is pretty amorphous, it appears.
Yeah, that's very true. Talking with Mark Scribner, transportation policy expert for the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org and the web. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Let's just take the ignoring the court orders, put those to the end of the table for a moment, because when you look at the full body scanners, you have the Government Accountability Office reporting that, well, their term is it's unclear if they at all are effective in detecting body-borne explosives. But let's just say that they worked as they were, as the brochure says they're supposed to work. There's not even half the number needed to make the use of these machines effective to prevent any sort of body-borne explosives.
Correct. So, yeah, assuming these machines are actually good at detecting body-borne explosives, you would need approximately 1,800 in airports. But as you mentioned earlier, we've only got about 750 of these in 160 airports nationwide. So, I'm not saying terrorists are, you know, usually the brightest bulbs, but it doesn't take a genius to see, well, maybe that security line doesn't have a body scanner, so I'm going to go there if I want to try to sneak through some explosives or whatever device. So even if they worked, which is very dubious, and you mentioned the GAO public report. There's a Government Accountability Office. There was an audit done by the GAO several years ago, and it's classified, unfortunately. But we do know, thanks to former Transportation Infrastructure Committee Chairman John Mica in the House, he was able to view that audit report. And he said in a hearing that if the American public knew how high the failure rate was, they would be outraged. So we have... And you know, the Congressional Research Service has also noted that they took a much more conservative stance on this, but they did at least note that experts are divided about the effectiveness of these body scanners. Now there was an interesting study done by three Cornell University economists several years ago when they after 9/11 you saw a sharp decline in short haul flights, say New York City to Washington D.C. and they were looking into, well, where did these people go? And, you know, 18 months or so after the attacks, there was a fear element. A lot of people were just scared of flying, but that sort of started to wash out. Then, but the decline persisted. So where did the rest of these people go? And they estimated that after looking at the data, that basically a good chunk of these folks took to the roads rather than fly. And given that the roads are far more dangerous than flying, despite the low terrorism risk that's overblown, frankly, but they estimated that about 500 additional road deaths per year could be attributed to post 9/11 security policies. So that's not just the body scanners, but that's, you know, baggage, 100% baggage screening, taking off your shoes, things that make flying take longer and more uncomfortable. So we've seen, you know, if that's true, and that's we have a little over 30,000 road fatalities every year, but that's an increase of about a percent and a half due to these TSA policies. And so what the TSA should really be asking is, do we really believe that our policies, our post 9/11 security policies, are saving more than a full 747 of passenger lives every year? I don't think they'd be able to say that with a straight face. I don't know any of the, in the security community, I don't think anyone really believes that. So, there's the problem. You know, not only are we spending billions of dollars a year on this agency, this massive agency that's only a little over 10 years old, but it's very likely that they are killing far more people than they are saving through these security theater policies.
A minute left here. Since the TSA wants to ignore court orders, is there anyone in the House or the Senate, any member of Congress, who wants to step up and make sure things are done right, or does the TSA have way too many friends in Congress and that just ain't going to happen?
So I think that there is a bipartisan sort of group of members of Congress that are very, very skeptical of the TSA. Unfortunately, that's not a very large group. I think the biggest problem with getting Congress to act is it's this minimal risk. No one wants to be the politician that rails against a security agency and then, you know, God forbid there's another attack. They would get blamed for that. So I think even though that risk is low, I do think it's a fact that, you know, we're never going to be 100% safe. There will eventually be another terrorist attack, whether that's as large as 9/11. I mean, God forbid, hopefully not. But, you know, there will be more terrorist attacks. That's something we need to accept. That's a risk that is going to be present as long as there are people, in this world intent on doing evil like that. You know, I think that's the main problem for getting congressional action, because no one wants to be the guy who let the terrorists, you know, attack. Even though that probably wouldn't be true, that you couldn't, you know, given that these security policies are ineffective or at best and counterproductive at worst. But I think that's the main reason why we've been, you know, reform out of Congress has been so difficult to reach.
Learn more about this issue and others of importance at CEI.org. That's a website for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We've been joined by their transportation policy expert, Mark Scribner. Mark, thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.